History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history podcast told through entertaining stories. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nico Horner is on the phone. Hey, Nico.
Hey, can you hear us? Hear me?
We got you, man.
Yeah, man. How are you?
Oh, sorry about that.
It's not your fault. We're not going to blame you.
Speech. In no way could it possibly be your fault. I'll take it, Lawrence. I'll wear it.
All right, good.
Yeah, fun speaks. We're good.
Yeah. So were you out in the playpen on the boat?
Nope. I'm usually one to never turn down a boat. As you know, it's a great thing to be invited to, but I had some previously set up plans. I was the day I did the kids camp, so I was doing that.
Oh, it was the same day you did that we talked to you about last week. Well, that's cool. Well, good on you.
Kids come first.
God love you. Good on you for keeping the commitment. Is it a coincidence that the Cubs are 5-1 and have scored 39 runs since a bunch of them got together on the boat? Or since your camp, either way, I suppose.
No, I mean, hanging out's a very important thing throughout the season, and being able to do it all together in a group, no better place to do it than in Chicago in the summer.
Have you been on a boat out there? Have you done that thing before?
Yes. It's been a long, special thing to get to do in our city in Chicago, and we don't take that for granted, so we get out there whenever we can.
That's the best thing about this city in the summer, isn't it, man? Like, all the options for stuff like that. This place rules in the summer.
Yeah. I mean, I live in Lincoln Park, and I'm going to walk from the water, so whether it's on a boat or just walking out to the steps, it's always a part of Chicago for me.
Have you made plans for All-Star Week, and could they be altered if you make the team?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably would always be a priority, I would imagine. But, I'm headed to San Francisco. Go ahead, head back there, see a bunch of friends, hang out for a couple days, and then get back to it for the second half.
That's cool. So will you see your mom out there, too, or just the friends? Family, too?
Yeah, family. My mom's in Oakland, and then a bunch of friends in San Francisco. It'll be a good break, for sure.
How do your friends treat you, Nico? Like, because you're a professional athlete. You're doing very well. People see you on TV. And I know that baseball players can kind of shrink into the background when they're not wearing their uniform and stuff. But do you still have, like, old friends? Or are those the only friends that you have? Because now you got money.
Yeah, I pretty much just left them all behind once I made it.
That's the way to do it. It's just It's just safer that way, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a simple move. Yeah, a lot of my best friends are from high school or middle school, and then Julie and I have a bunch of friends from college that ended up in the Bay Area too. Nice mix.
You know, do you guys give each other crap? Is that just a baseball love language, or is that a love language for you and your friends as well?
What's that?
Just like giving each other the business, like, you know, making jokes about each other, the mild teasing, making sure not to go too far so somebody loses the sensitivity contest, you know, just keeping it honest.
I feel like our team this year has been pretty good with that. I mean, we got a nice variety of young talent and guys who've been here for a long time and guys who've won in other places, and I feel like there's always that fine line of healthy ribbing where things never get out of control, but are always kind of keeping an eye on things through good humor. Yeah.
Who's the best at giving it out on your team? Who's the funniest at doing that stuff?
Yeah, JT's kind of at the heart of a lot of that. Ryan Presley's pretty solid. Drew Pomerantz, sneaky, got that good salty bullpen vet kind of feel. Not afraid to call things out. Yeah, so we got a nice mix. Jameson Taillon. Pitchers have a lot of time to observe and critique, so they're usually on it.
I know we asked you about Matthew Boyd last week and what's it like playing behind him, but now that it's official that he's going to be on the All-Star team, what's that like for you guys to celebrate him?
Yeah, well, he kind of celebrated it on his own with that start to get announced early in the day at the team meeting and then go out and dominate and punch a bunch of guys out. That was pretty cool to watch. And all his interviews and everything were very humble and giving credit to teammates and stuff, but he's worked so hard to create this opportunity for himself, and just cool to see guys take ownership of their career and make special things happen like that.
You know, David Cone was talking on the broadcast, and we were talking about it yesterday with Pitching Ninja on this show yesterday, about how it's hard to quantify deception. Like, teams look for it. They want to know, is it arm angle? Is it release point? But, like, Boyd's got that thing, and I think Shota's got that thing. You got a couple of dudes who, like, are those kind of guys more difficult to hit off of than people like us understand?
Yeah, and I think it differs from hitter to hitter based on, you know, what your strengths are and things like that. But, yeah, everything wants to be measured these days, but I think there still are pitchers out there that, you know, it's like, man, why am I not hitting him? And you never quite put a finger on it, but you look up at the end of the year every year and they're having a great season, and there's definitely something to that. And just a feel for pitching, too, that, you know, everyone wants to measure a pitch's effectiveness, but how they pair together is really going to be the biggest thing. And in my experience as a hitter, and we've got a couple lefties who do that really well.
Nico Hoerner is on the Spiegel and Holmes show, as he is weekly. So my favorite moment from the Sunday night game was on your triple, where, you know, you're busting ass and running efficiently and excitingly as you do. And then you get to third with the pop-up slide, Nico, and it looked like you just froze right there and just looked at the dugout like, check me out, dudes. Like, you, like, it's hard to triple in baseball. And you made it all the way there, just popped up. Were you feeling yourself in that moment looking at your teammates as they gave it back to you right there?
Yeah, I like the third base dugout on a triple. It's pretty cool with not a lot of foul territory at Wrigley. It feels like you could, like, reach out and touch them and face-to-face with all your guys. And, yeah, that's a pretty cool moment.
So that first swing in the next at bat, Nico, that felt like a man who knew that there was a possibility for a natural cycle. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, 100-mile-an-hour sinkers and the wind blowing in, probably not the best combo, but all you can do is give yourself a chance, and yeah.
So were you pissed that Birdie came in? He got an at-bat in the eighth inning. That could have been your next at-bat to take a shot at it.
Yeah, I don't think the, you know, the wind and the confidence from the bench coach Flaherty was too high on me homering, so you can take it up with him. But it was a mature decision. So I just got to do it again.
Have you ever cycled in high school or college or anywhere?
No, I don't think I've done it at any level. Honestly, it's pretty hard thing to do. I feel like, you know, I had some special days, but never the cycle. And honestly, I don't think I've seen very many. I was trying to remember that when I saw Carson hit for one earlier this year. I don't know if I've ever seen another one. It's pretty rare.
Especially in order. Like that would be a really cool thing to accomplish as well. Nico Hoerner joining us for a few more minutes here on The Score. Ian Happ was on the station earlier today, and he talked about the choice of you guys leaving. I love the idea that you guys got to spend your Sunday in Chicago. What was that, your Monday in Chicago? What was that like for you guys to be able to have a day off in the city before a road trip?
Yeah, we've kind of switched to that a lot more often since COVID. There was a lot of, you know, changes that came out of that unique season, and that's one that's kind of stuck around with the, you know, other Midwest cities that we can have short travel to. It works a little better after a day game on Sunday when you have, like, that full Sunday night and then most of the day on Monday. Sunday night baseball makes that a little tougher, but, yeah, still kind of a point of debate among players, actually, like, a lot of guys kind of prefer just getting to the city and having a full day and hanging out, but I like having more time in Chicago in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, and sleeping in your own bed, like, after a night game, there was a delay. It's nice to not then have to pack everything up and get on a plane for a flight that's probably going to land at 1 or 2 in the morning in Minneapolis versus, all right, we'll take our time, go get breakfast if you want the next day, and just kind of hang out before you have to leave.
Yeah, I do sleep better in hotels, though, I gotta be honest. I love hotel beds.
Wow. Really? What is it? What is it about them?
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history podcast told through entertaining stories. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just the perfect temperature control, everything's perfectly clean, and there's no factors in the hotel. Like, you're in a sleeping chamber there.
Listen to how the tone changed as Nico started to talk about sleep.
He started fantasizing about sleeping in the hotel.
He was picturing himself in the hotel bed. Like, it's yours. You're in charge, and there's no factors.
I mean, I woke up at 11 today, you know? Like, I got real 10 hours of sleep last night.
Oh, that's outstanding.
That's powerful stuff.
So how far down do you go? You go 68? You go 66?
Usually 65, but sometimes I'll go lower if it doesn't feel like it's really giving me the effort I want. So yeah
man, you're ahead of your years, because I think as we get older we start talking about sleep the way we used to talk about, like, booze. Like, oh man, and not like I had 10 beers last night. I got 10 hours last night. Hell yeah,
it's special stuff. You can envy a man for some good sleep too. It's like, man, you just know he's feeling good. It's like, yeah,
you know what's funny,
I'm in a good spot.
All the people that now look at Kobe Bryant as a religion, you know, they talk about like the Mamba mentality. They forget the part where Kobe towards the end was like, you know what really is the superpower? It's not getting up at 4. It's getting 8 hours of sleep. And like for him.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I think the early workout is the most overrated thing in all of sports.
Why do you think that way?
It's just counterproductive. Like, especially when you're in college, getting up at, you know, 5:30 to lift at 6, you're like waking up and immediately picking up as much weight as you can, and then just being in sleep debt for the entire week, doing that 3 times a week while doing classes and staying up late. Like, it just, I mean, maybe build some character somewhere along there, but I don't really believe in that too much.
Wow, it's interesting. It reminds me of the old football coaches have to show up before the crack of dawn to show that they really care. Maybe get some sleep, you make a better choice on game day.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like nothing shows that you care more than just, like, doing what's actually best for yourself and the team.
I think that the science backs you on this, too, Nico. Like, it's frustrating. I don't know how much of that is done in baseball, but coming from football, it's almost like a contest of, well, I was here at 5. Well, I was here at 4:30.
Yeah. There used to be some of that in spring training. It's kind of fizzled out for sure in our era of optimization and all the health information that's out there. Maybe we need a little more of it. I don't know.
Nico, can I ask you about some analytics? You tell me if they mean anything or not.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So your fly ball percentage this year is the highest it's ever been. And your line drive percentage this year is the lowest it's ever been. Is any of that by design, or is that happenstance with the sample?
That stinks. Yeah, fly balls, for me, not that great. If they're from left center to the left field line, I can produce on them, but fly balls are the big part of the field. It's just a lot of butt bats and good swing, just missed kind of thing. Line drives are key, are definitely my best way of controlling luck in this game of randomness, right? So line drives are incredibly important. I think we talked about that a lot last year, and
You love the line drives, and we've talked about that a bunch, but I guess it's last week you said something about the power surge, that it was like some things you'd been working on, so my brain just sort of connected it to that, but it's not that. I'm wrong about that connection.
I want flush contact. I want to hit the ball flush on the barrel, high line drives, but honestly, like, I'm not going up there to hit ground balls, but I'd rather hit like a firm one hop ground ball somewhere than like a high fly ball out of the middle of the field, because that's an out every single time when I hit it. Getting the ball in the air is such a hot topic for a long time, and obviously we don't want to hit a bunch of ground balls. There's no slug there. But medium hit contact high in the air is an out every single time at this level. So
I think
the ball off the ground is a line drive.
I think Saturday you hit like 3 balls just to the right of first base. Like, you almost hit like a double or a triple down the right field line like 3 times. Any intent there to go the other way, if that's even possible?
I think a lot of my best swings to right field are just when I'm ready to hit the ball in the middle of the field and it catches me a little deep and I'm moving well and I'm still in a strong place. Those are kind of up and away four seams, which kind of have a flatter path. So when I catch those deep, they tend to be kind of head high backside when I'm moving well. But just a little late on those swings, but good swings.
Is there anyone that Nico Horner would like to see in the Home Run Derby?
I don't know if you would have interest, but Seiya's pretty incredible in a practice setting, obviously in a game setting too. But I feel like just his, a part of why, like, I mean, he's been a good big leaguer for a long time now, but I think kind of the feeling internally has always been like, there's just, as we're seeing this year, there's more power in there. Like, it's going to show up and just continuing to get comfortable here. But watching him take a BP when he's really locked in, it's different than anyone else on our team. Like, it's a completely different level of explosiveness and consistency. It's really beautiful.
He hit one out to right center the other night that was just like, it was so easy off his bat. It doesn't seem possible with that guy.
Yeah. So there's times when he's taking batting practice and it's like, the fence isn't really the goal anymore. It's like things beyond it. It's more like the measuring stick of if he's hit it well, because like the fence is kind of irrelevant. It's kind of like a big kid in Little League. It's probably like outgrown the 200-foot field. And it's just a beautiful kind of effortless swing like we've talked about. So, he would do an amazing job in the Home Run Derby, I think.
I hope you get that cycle someday, man. I looked it up because I remembered it was close. The cycle has happened 349 times in Major League Baseball.
That's the deer, right? Because perfect game is what, in the 20s?
Yeah, perfect game's so in the 20s. No hit.
So it's like 10, 15 times as likely as a perfect game.
No hitters are 326. It's almost exactly the same rarity as no hitter, a cycle.
Huh. I would have said a no-hitter was harder to do, but that's interesting.
I feel like natural cycle is way harder.
Oh, way harder. To get four at-bats in a row?
There's only been 14 of those.
Oh, my God. That's
a good baseball stat. Wait, so has there been more cycles or no-hitters exactly?
326 no-hitters and 349 cycles. So more cycles than no-hitters, just barely.
All right. I'm gonna ask some clubhouse questions today, trivia-wise, see what people say.
I like it. Nico, we appreciate you, man. Thanks for dealing with all the technical stuff, man. Good luck in Minnesota.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No worries. Yeah, not your fault.
I haven't played here before, actually. I'm excited. I've been here twice, but I was hurt both times. So this is my, I guess, last big league field I haven't played at. So,
that's awesome.
That's so dope, man. Have fun.
I will. It'll be a good day.
See you later, sir.
Thanks, Nico.
All right, fellas. See ya.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.